And for that, we say, good evening to Sumit Desai. How you doing, my friend?
Good evening, John.
How's everything going at Mesiro?
Things are going great at Mesiro. It's a great company to work for. I enjoy my coworkers, and I really enjoy the work we get to do on behalf of our clients.
So, and you have a lot of clients, and you are able to help people out because you do a lot of the research. You have a team that does the research,
yep.
And also you have the great people that help work with the clients, and that kind of puts you in this nice little middle ground spot of sizes as it comes to wealth management companies, right?
Yeah, you know, Mesiro and its wealth management business has been around for almost 90 years, where the legacy business has started the company. And, you know, one of the benefits of being around as long as we have and, you know, having the size that we have is that we're small enough to really be able to spend a lot of time with each of our individual clients, but big enough to have all the resources that the large, you know, multinational banks have. So, you know, Mesiro has been very gracious and supportive in building out our investment research platform. And we now have a team of 6 individuals that are constantly scouring the universe and learning about different investments and supporting our advisors. So our advisors can spend more time with their clients, helping with the things that matter, like financial planning, helping to meet their goals, avoid risks and things like that.
Right. Meet their goals. Well, each individual client is different, and how you get there is with the Mesiro conversations with the advisors and the families, and you kind of support it all with the research in general. All right. Well, let's look into the crystal ball per se. Or that's maybe not the right way to say it, but in 2026, like, what's the vibes? What are you guys looking at right now?
Yeah, you know, vibes is a good way to describe it, because it really has been a vibes market. You know, whatever seems to be the cool, trendy topic is what gets the most attention, and, you know, you see the most price action, and then everything else kind of gets left behind. The past couple years have really been driven by the AI trade. You know, companies that are spending hundreds of billions of dollars building out data infrastructure to support things around artificial intelligence, all things artificial intelligence. And that's really been driving the market over the past couple of years and driving the economy. You know, looking forward for 2026 and beyond, we're relatively optimistic about the economy, a little bit more cautious about the market because valuations are rich. But if you look at the economy in 2026, you have the Federal Reserve that's looking to cut interest rates, you know, a trend that they started in the past year and, you know, are likely to continue this year going forward. We're also going to see a lot of tax refunds. There were some pretty significant tax law changes that were passed last year. Those are going to go into effect this year. So consumers can probably expect larger refunds, you know, coming in April and later on this year that could help kind of continue to boost the economy. The consumer remains really strong. Inflation is sort of moderating and in check right now. Which I think is a good thing. And then finally, corporations' balance sheets are relatively strong. There are pockets that we are, you know, watching closely, you know, areas that have a lot of debt, you know, may see some hiccups this year, you know, certain parts of the debt market have grown quite a bit. So we're watching that. But overall, our expectations for the economy are quite positive. And, you know, happy to talk about what that means for different investment returns as well.
Some people might listen to that and go, well, I'm glad he's optimistic. I don't feel good about the economy. I mean, we do kind of see this disconnect. And I'm glad you separated the two, the market versus the economy.
Yeah.
We do have a lot of people that still say, man, these grocery prices are killing me.
Yeah, I mean, the K-shaped economy is sort of a phrase that's used to describe how, you know, wealthy individuals, those that have assets and those that are invested in the market are feeling great. And, you know, lower income consumers, those that are still dealing with student loans or healthcare costs or, you know, other personal issues may, you know, really are still continuing to feel the pain of higher prices. You know, what's remarkable is the resiliency of that upper end consumer that's really been supporting the economy. But as you see, if that changes, you know, that would be a risk. But, you know, certainly we're sort of having a two-pronged economy where certain people are feeling the crunch a little bit more than others.
For sure. More with Sumit Desai. We'll look under the hood of our own portfolios and see how to manage that as we move forward. Okay, we talked about the optimism of 2026, perhaps for businesses, for the economy as a whole. Sumit Desai, as you admitted, as we all know, there's no crystal ball and anything can happen. Paint us a picture of maybe some things that could trip us up here in 2026.
Sure, yeah. You know, like I mentioned, one of the big drivers of the markets and the economy over the past couple of years has been the AI trade. Large, what they call hyperscalers, a lot of the big familiar tech giants that we know are spending hundreds of billions of dollars to build out infrastructure for artificial intelligence. What's interesting about that is nobody really knows how long that can go on for and what the return on those hundreds of billions of dollars will be. It's very uncertain. So I think right now you're seeing, you know, last year you saw this sort of phenomenon where a company would announce that they're spending, a couple billion dollars on a new project, and the market would view that positively and say, boy, they're going to earn a huge return on that investment. And then you saw the stock prices run up. If the sentiment changes around that, and today, if you look at the S&P 500, 40% of the market of that index is now the top 10 companies. And most of that value is driven by, these big AI related players. So wow. If you're invested in the S&P 500, the future of AI is really going to drive the returns of the S&P 500. So that's something we're spending a lot of time thinking about.
Wait, I want to make sure I understand that, yeah. Because I think a lot of people might listen and go, well, I'm not invested in AI.
Right.
But if you are in ETFs that are heavily based or mimicking the S&P 500, mutual funds probably have a lot of AI in them. Like, we often don't know what's actually underneath the hood. Do we need to maybe do a little self-check, or even better yet, talk to a financial advisor like the folks at Mesirow to really understand how diverse our accounts may be? Because maybe they're not as diverse as we think they are.
Yeah, I think that it's a unique phenomenon today, relative to what we've seen in the past as it relates to this massive concentration in the S&P 500. It's not necessarily a good or bad thing. It just is a thing that I think people should be aware of. These companies also make gobs of money. They're generating tons and tons of free cash flow every year. So these are really great businesses, some of the best businesses in the world, really.
Right.
But they are taking up a big portion of that benchmark. So if you're invested in the S&P 500, which has been a wonderful place to be invested in for really, the past 15 or 20 years, you have a lot of AI exposure in your portfolio. Those are the companies that have really been driving the market returns over the past few years. And that's what's in the S&P 500. Again, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it makes you, when you do have a chance to sit down with your portfolio manager, or your financial advisor, and say, hey, what is the exposure I want? And are there areas that we may want to rotate into that are more attractively valued or aren't as concentrated as it relates to risk?
When you say new area, what do you mean? Is that going overseas, perhaps?
Yeah, overseas markets have been sort of underinvested for a very long time. Last year, 2025, was one of the first years in several years where non-U.S. markets actually outperformed U.S. markets. Now, don't get me wrong, U.S. markets had a phenomenal
year or two,
but the non-U.S. markets, international, actually outperformed. Emerging markets outperformed the U.S. as well. So having that kind of diversification makes a lot of sense. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. Like you said, the crystal ball is, foggy at best. So having diversification, I think being a little bit humble and realizing that, you don't know what's going to happen in the future, I think makes a lot of sense in this environment.
It's a lot of it, like not falling into the FOMO trap of I need to try and make X amount per year. And oh my gosh, why didn't I put more in this? Why do I have this international? Like 3 years ago, Someone going, why don't I have anything invested in international? I'm sure clients ask that question.
We heard it a lot because international stocks are significantly cheaper than U.S. stocks. Part of that is because the U.S. is growing a lot faster. So, to the extent that we've had international exposure in portfolios, some clients say, why do I own this? Why not just go all in on U.S. tech? That works until it doesn't. And I think, we've had a lot of younger investors that may not have been around in 2008 or weren't around in 2000 when tech stocks really crashed and sunk the economy. And, those periods happen. And we're seeing, some signs. It's not, I don't think we're overly concerned about any kind of extreme market bubbles or anything like that. But we're seeing signs of speculation in the markets that I think warrant a little bit of caution.
Yeah. I was just reading through the NASDAQ numbers from 2000 to 2016. These are things I do in my free time now.
Same.
I was just looking at the dot-com bubble and the burst. I was young. I was in high school when that happened. I can't believe that NASDAQ was down 78% at one point. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but like, check your blind spots, people.
Well, yeah. And, valuation and owning really good businesses at attractive prices, works in all different environments. And if you go back to that environment where tech stocks were down 70% during the tech bubble of 2000, small and mid-cap stocks actually performed really well during that environment. And that's what I'm talking about. We talked about a little bit around, what are the areas that have seen the most growth and appreciation? That's technology. There are other areas in the market, healthcare, energy, small and mid-cap stocks, international stocks that are all offering diversification away from this one mega trade. I think that it makes sense. Again, we don't know the future. Be humble and have sort of a core investment strategy that's diversified and maintain a flexibility to respond to different market environments rather than reacting sort of, too quickly.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Are we in a long stretch of large and mega cap companies doing really, really well and small and mid lagging behind a little bit? And these things tend to cycle through, don't they?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it. Some of the biggest trends in the market have to do with, the large companies outperforming the small companies. It comes down to, a couple different things, economic trends, competition, changing technologies. Those are all things that, will play out over time. The AI trade, for example, there's a new large language model every couple months, and it might be OpenAI or Microsoft at any given month. Someone has the best new product, and that keeps on changing. Nobody really knows what it's going to look like down the road. So you really want to think about another interesting thing about some of these other small and mid-cap companies, they may actually benefit more from AI because they can run their operations more efficiently, lower costs in that way. There's still lots of opportunity, lots of really good businesses that are trading at attractive valuations outside of that one big, massive, large cap trade.
We're going to post conversations that we had earlier, the podcast, over the next 3 weeks. Really quickly, I just want to leave listeners with one thought you had for me. The idea of putting some money either on the side or in a place that maybe you could invest in when the market goes down. I think a lot of people don't think of it that way. They go, oh, I don't want to get out of the market. It's doing so well. I'm going to FOMO missing out. Put it in a safe place, and maybe that's going to be there for you when the market drops. If it drops 20% in a month, maybe there's some buying opportunities there. That's what you told me. I sounded smart saying it, but you're the one that told me that.
No, I think you summarized it well. I think, look, over the long term, you have to stay invested in the stock market if you want to see your capital grow. But within that concept, there is room for more flexibility to maintain some dry powder within a diversified portfolio to use volatility in your favor. Something we talk about amongst the research team that I mentioned is that volatility is a market feature, not a flaw. So a lot of times when the market drops, people get scared and their first inclination is to sell their stocks because they don't want to see their portfolio drop even more. The right thing to do in most cases during those times is to actually put more money to work. But to put money to work, you have to have it. Over the past several years, one of the benefits of rates increasing is that you can park your money in relatively safe things like treasury bonds, short-term treasury bills, and still earn a modest return while you're waiting as well.
I love that. There's a lot more to get to. We'll cover it in the next couple of podcasts over the next couple of Mesro Mondays. Smith, it was great to catch up with you again, my friend. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Happy New Year. Best of luck in 2026.
Amen. 877-MESRO, mesro.com to talk to one of those fine folks to help you on out, and the research team behind all that they do as well.